The following three-part podcast is provided by CALM, the Committee on Archives, Libraries, and Museums, a joint committee of the American Library Association, Association of American Museums, and the Society of American Archivists, under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike license. For more information, go to creativecommons.org. Part 1.
The following podcast was produced for CALM, the Joint Committee on Archives, Libraries, and Museums. I'm Lee Reifenberg, a member of Group C in the 2010 cohort of the American Library Association's Emerging Leaders Program. Our group was honored to have David Ferriero, Archivist of the United States, as our inaugural podcast guest. A long road has led Mr. Ferriero to his current position at the National Archives, from his naval service during the Vietnam War to shelving books in the MIT Library to high-profile positions at Duke University and the New York Public Library. He has gained a wealth of experience and a unique perspective that continues to inform his work as the chief collector and protector of the record of the United States. We discuss those experiences, his role at the National Archives, and his views on the future of libraries, archives, and museums when we met in his office in Washington, D.C.
Mr. Ferriero, thank you so much for joining us today. You've now held several very high-profile positions with a great deal of responsibility, but everyone has to start somewhere. So especially for those of us who are relatively new to the fields of librarianship and archival and museum work, can you talk a little bit about how you got started and the path that's brought you here?
Sure. I went to Northeastern University in Boston as an undergraduate, and the great value of education there is the cooperative education program, where you work a semester and go to school a semester. So my very first co-op job, most people don't know this, but I worked in a psychiatric facility working with the criminally insane, maximum security criminally insane, and learned a lot about psychology in that environment, which played out in various ways later in life, but that was my very first co-op job. And then went from there to my next co-op job was shelving books in the Humanities Library at MIT.
Okay.
That was my introduction to libraries. And I was very fortunate to be working for a woman, Frances Sumner, who was the Associate Humanities Librarian at MIT at that time, who recognized that she had a willing student and actually changed my job from shelver to junior library assistant. So that was my introduction. So I was an education major at Northeastern University and not a very good student and dropped out, joined the Navy, spent 4 years in the Navy as a hospital corpsman with a specialty in psychiatry, and spent a year in Vietnam assigned to a Marine Division, and then on the ship, hospital ship USS Sanctuary. So my psychiatric training, you know, I really loved it. I really loved working with the patients, and never expected to, you know, use those skills after the fact. But let me tell you, every day it comes in handy. The experience in Vietnam, I think, was also very good for me in terms of my ability to put things in perspective. So when you're dealing in life and death situations, you kind of learn a way of viewing the world. And so now in my life, when there are people around me who are, you know, the sky is falling, you know, my first question is, so, is there a life at risk here? Just the ability to put things in perspective. So I came out of the Navy and went back to MIT libraries and took a part-time job while I finished my degree, and went on to stay there for 31 years. At every point in my career when I thought, geez, you've been here too long, you've got to get out of here, you need to do something else, there would be an opportunity for me. And I was very fortunate that I had several friends, Sumner first, and then Irma Johnson, who was the science librarian, and Natalie Nicholson, who was the director of libraries, who really took an interest in my career. And I was very fortunate to have opportunities that helped me grow in the MIT libraries. It was an extraordinary experience.
You're the first librarian to become archivist of the United States, and that gives you a unique perspective. How does that affect your work, vision, and leadership within the National Archives?
I think I'm the first person for a long time to head up the agency who knows something about the business of the agency. And for, I think it's safe to say that for lots of people, that's very exciting. And for some people, that's not so exciting. I do know a whole lot about archives and records management and information and users and technology, which have all been, even in the first 5 months, have been useful in terms of being able to participate in a conversation about what we're doing, how we're going, what the future looks like, those kinds of things.
Okay.
In a way that I would guess that someone who didn't have those credentials, it would be a harder startup period. And you know, my level of engagement in the issues right away is probably different than other archivists in the past.
Any thoughts on why the Obama administration would have tapped a librarian for the job?
That's a really good question. It's I got a cold call in late May, from the White House. So I said, I'm really flattered. It's ordinarily a PhD historian or someone who's contributed a lot of money to a campaign, and I'm not either one. You're looking at the wrong guy. And he asked me to think it over the weekend, think over, and I did, and he called me up first thing Monday morning, and we had the same conversation. I said, I'm really flattered. 10 minutes later, I got a call from someone from the transition team who wanted to come and visit me in New York. He came the next day and talked to me about what the president's looking for in terms of his appointments, and looking for people who think outside the box, people who are facile with technology, looking for a different kind of skill set in terms of his appointments, and asked me to come to Washington to talk more with some more people about the job. So I went down at the end of that next week and met with head of White House personnel, several members from the Archives Foundation board, historians, to talk about the job. And it was a great meeting. I was in a room in the executive office building overlooking the West Bank, so we were able to look down.
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty spectacular. And as I was leaving, they asked, so can we consider you a candidate? And I said, yes. And that started this intense process of scrutiny. I was not allowed to tell anyone about it. And I got a call the first week in June from the White House saying, the president called from Saudi Arabia and he's thinking about you and he wants you to be the archivist of the United States. That was the job offer.
And how do you react to a call like that?
You just don't, it's not something that I was prepared for. I knew the conversation went well. I got really excited about it because it was clear that I knew a whole lot, and it would be a great opportunity to work in this administration.
Okay.
And that was, it was very exciting. But to get that call was just, in retrospect, I thought, how should I have reacted? And I should have said, well, put him on the phone. It was a great moment.
I imagine. While we're on the subject, let's talk a little bit about the confirmation process. What was that like?
It was pretty invasive. They had all of the financial records, tax records, for the past 5 years, I guess, for myself and my wife. FBI did investigations on my background for the last, going back 15 years. I had no idea who they were talking to, but I was started to get email from folks around the country saying, what is going on? The FBI was here. The FBI wasn't allowed to tell them what they were doing. All they could say was, it's not a criminal investigation.
Okay, so they knew it wasn't that, right.
People were, the folks at Duke, for instance, were taking bets on what position it was. And I couldn't talk. I wasn't allowed to talk. And that process went on all summer.
So
didn't turn up any dirt or...
Apparently not, but we're sitting here, so...
And of course, the big questions were, have you paid your taxes, and do you have domestic help? Those were the questions that they asked up front.